will come to order. And good afternoon, committee. I want to announce beforehand that House Bill 2335 has been taken off our list today. 2335, we won't be doing that. We're going to introduce some committee bills first today, then we're going to move to 2106, and then wrap it up with 2087. First order of business we have to do is open a work session to introduce committee bills. Representative March.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. For purposes of consideration, I move the LC drafts 2324, 2329, 2326, 2302, and 2330 be introduced as committee bills.
Thank you. Representative March moves the aforementioned bills as committee bills. Do we have any discussion? Any objection? Motion carries. Thank you. Now we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2106.
Okay.
Let me see who signed up to testify here. I'd like to call up Charles Hester and William Orr. Any objection to testifying as panel there? Please come forward. Thank you.
Did I think all these drafts turn?
Yeah, if you'd please identify yourself for the record. Oh, and before you do that, Kara, I'm sorry to catch you unawares. Can you tell us a bit about that bill?
Sure. Okay. I'm sure they're going to do a fine job, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2106 would allow the State Board of Geologists Examiners to investigate upon their own motion or a citizen complaint violations of statutes relating to geologists. And my understanding is that the statute's kind of ambiguous right now, so they're trying to get that clarified. Also, there's no fiscal or no revenue impact on this measure.
All right, thank you. Gentlemen, sorry for the interruption, if you would.
Chair Wilson and members of the House Rules and Redistricting and Public Affairs Committee, my name is William Orr. I reside at 12220 South Butte Creek Road in Scotts Mills here in Marion County. I've been a registered geologist here in Oregon since April of 1978, and I'm the head of the State Board of Geological Examiners.
Chair Wilson, my name is Charles Hester. I reside at 2922 Dogwood Drive South here in Salem. My phone number is area code 503-375-3915. I'm the public member of the Board of Geologists Examiner. As the public member, I serve as the chair of the Compliance Committee. I have been on the committee 2 years, and during this two-year period, it's come before us several times that we've received either anonymous complaints or reports that have strictly been submitted as questions, not as complaints, for our review as to whether or not they meet the current standard of practice. The original bill that we are today speaking in support of, HB 2106, attempts to clarify that language to clearly indicate that the board can, at its own volition, pursue an issue that comes before the board, even if it is anonymous or just provided for our information. We have a handout that we submitted to the committee. On page one in the bold type, it addresses the two main issues that seem to be at least a little ambiguous in the current language of our statutes. On page two, we point out three, under the three bullets at the top of the page, some of our concerns and why we feel it's important to have this change. And we're here today to answer any and all questions we can that the committee may have as it concerns this issue that we brought before you.
Thank you. Committee, do we have any questions? Just one thing I would ask up front is, can we have indication, if you would, on what kinds of complaints would come up? I know that's probably not a typical thing, doesn't happen every day, but what kinds of things do you hear?
Well, we've been averaging over the last 2 years about 12 complaints a year. About 3 to 4 of those either come anonymously or come where they've strictly asked the question of whether or not this is the public practice of geology. Most of the issues we seem to deal with fall into the category of whether or not the individual is actually practicing public or in the public practice of geology, and if so, is the work that they've specifically done as it relates to the report that's been submitted to the board adequate. In other words, meet current standards of practice. We normally, our process is to review all complaints to determine if there is the potential for harm to the public. If we make that determination, it's sent to technical review by one of the individuals on the board that has the background to really technically address it. Since I'm a CPA and a certified fraud examiner, I don't consider myself an expert in geology. If both technical review and the committee feels that there is a potential for harm, usually we pursue it by asking the individual to provide written comments on any allegations made. If that does not resolve the entire issue, we ask the individual to meet with the committee and fully discuss all the issues and provide any information or documentation that they have available. And if after that it's still not resolved by the committee, all of our actions by the compliance committee go to the full board to be reviewed, and we take whatever action we feel is appropriate. We're allowed by statute to issue certain sanctions, including a fine or take action against the license. But it runs a broad gamut. I wouldn't say they all fall under... we have individuals who are not licensed who are practicing geology. We have individuals who are licensed. As there are various stages of geologists licensed. Some are licensed as what we call RGs, registered geologists, but we also have certified engineering geologists. Sometimes we have registered geologists doing certified engineering geologist work.
Okay, thank
you. Yes, sir.
Tell me what kind of jobs a geologist would typically be asked to perform, maybe the most often requested job that a geologist does.
If I could, I would defer to Mr. Orr. He's much more technically competent than I am.
The kinds of things geologists look at are areas where we have a question that comes up about, the suitability of a site for construction or whatever, the geologic nature. In a case of, for example, we have two varieties. We have what we call registered geologists and then certified engineering geologists. They might deal with cases where perhaps a storage tank for fuel or gasoline has leaked, and they would try to trace the plume of that underground. It basically becomes a geologic problem. It's not just a question of looking at and making a decision. The focus of the board is on the protection of life and property of the citizens of Oregon, but I think that anything to do with natural hazards, construction, suitability of sites, landslides, things of that nature, would come under consideration by a geologist.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Garay.
Mr. Hester, in briefly looking at your outline compared to what the bill would do, the only difference I can see is that you wouldn't have to, the citizen wouldn't bring the complaint to the chairman of the board. Is that correct? You would be able to bypass him. Is that or her? Is that the only change?
Yes, sir. Technically, that's basically what it is. Right now, if it's a anonymous complaint, it says currently in statute that it's supposed to be a written complaint. But if it's an anonymous complaint or just something for someone asked us to take a look at it and didn't want to file a complaint, we always ask them to. Some people decline for various reasons. We don't force them to submit a complaint. But if we see that there is an issue that may impact on the public, either health or safety, the board does not want to be in the position of just always formally going through the chair. We feel that if it comes to the board, if it looks like an issue that should be reviewed, then it should immediately come to the compliance committee. And the chair is not normally a member of the compliance committee. It's the compliance committee usually consists of me at the first cut. And once I look at it and see that if there is a potential issue, I immediately want to take it to a technical review. And this would give us the option of taking it to any member of the board to do the technical review. We also have a peer review process that I did not mention earlier. If both the technical reviewer and myself as committee chair feels that there's potential, we normally refer it to we try to get three. Sometimes by necessity, it's only two peer reviewers in the same area of practice to review it also. But it would just basically enable us to more expeditiously pursue these issues and resolve it for both the individual the allegations are made against or the firm, or the individual that has raised the concern or has passed it along to us. We don't want these to fall through the cracks.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Any further questions? I'm presuming no one else is here to testify on this bill. Let me ask you, are you aware of any opposition to this idea?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. Thank you. I might just signal to the committee here, feel fine personally about going into work session. Do any of you have any objections or reservations about that, about doing that today? Okay, in that case, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2106 and we'll open the work session on House Bill 2106, and I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Starr.
I move House Bill 2106 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Starr moves House Bill 2106 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Do we have any discussion? Any objection? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair?
Chair?
Committee?
Yes.
Would this, I think this might be one that would be suitable to put on the consent calendar.
It might be, but it might be best just to explain it out.
Okay.
I sure wouldn't have a problem with that. Okay. And with that said, do I have a carrier? Carol. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2087. And Representative Close, please.
While she's coming up, Mr. Chair, of the measure, but I do want to note that this has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means Committee, and you should have a fiscal impact statement in front of you.
Thank you, Representative Close. Welcome, and if you would identify yourself.
Please. Thank you, Chair Wilson and members of the House Rules Committee. I'm State Representative Betsy Close from House District 36, down the Valley Ways, Albany, Millersburg, Tangent. It includes Linn County and parts of Benton County. I'm having passed out my testimony, and I've tried to address areas of this bill for you and summarize it for you. The idea for this bill arose out of the concerns about Oregon's newly instituted mail ballot. We want to ensure it is fraud-proof and efficiently carrying out the election process. This bill was drafted before last fall's 2000 elections, but those elections further identified areas of concern, and so I have drafted two additional amendments. The bill seeks to remedy four major problems: the door-to-door pickup of ballots, change of address up and through election day, especially on college campuses. Because we have no statewide voter file, it's difficult to trace double ballots. And as you may know, that would be a $6 million expenditure to have a statewide voter file, even though it has a lot of support. That's, you should understand, it's $6 million to put that into effect. Third problem, people registering under several names. The clerks are checking signatures, but there again, there's difficulty in checking that. Poll tax question. The question of, do you have to pay to vote? Because stamps are required, and if you have a lot of ballot measures, several stamps are required. This probably led to the collection of ballots, which was fairly widespread in my district, we have heard. In my view, the mailbox needs to be the drop box because it's a secure location, or fairly secure location, and we want those locations to be secure. Section 1 of the bill deletes the drop boxes and establishes the ballot to be mailed or dropped at the office of the county clerk by signing in. And that's not unusual. In old-fashioned elections, you had to sign, for those of you who weren't here when we had those. Only the elector or the elector's immediate family may deposit the ballots. And it establishes postage will be paid by the state, And a further amendment I have clarifies that this is just done in statewide, not county-only elections. So the county would not have to pay return postage. This would be for statewide elections. And that was something that the Marion County Clerk brought to my attention. Section 2 deals with the hours and location the ballot can be dropped. Section 3 deals with absentees, and it renumbers the statutes. Section 4 is a renumbering of the statutes. The Dash 3 amendment, which I don't believe you have, but I have had it drafted. I have it with me. It includes the postage clarification about statewide elections only. And also tightens the address change language and the registration updates. In other words, we want to make sure that if there are address changes, my feeling is it should be done before the ballots are mailed out. Once the ballot is mailed out and it goes to somebody's home, if they're somewhere else and then they update their registration in that other place and then they're handed a ballot, the problem is that they would have two ballots. And that is, we are told that happens in parts of my district. I'm also working on an amendment that would deal with when you register, you would have to present some sort of identification, birth certificate, driver's license, Social Security, state ID card. There are several options we could list to show that you actually are that person. And that solves the problem of a person being able to register under several different names or types, variations of their own name, using their middle name, using initials, so forth, in different counties. Okay, I have since received memos from the Marion County and Linn County clerks. I did meet with the Marion County clerk and the Linn County clerk, and I also got a phone call from the Polk County clerk. They all have an interest in this bill, and I agreed I'd be more than happy to work with them on it. So my desire is to form a work group with these gentlemen to be able to present to the committee a well-thought-out, flawless election bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions?
I do.
Representative March.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, on page 2, it's subsection 6, you talk about the bill discusses personally depositing the ballot at a location described in ORS 254, 472, or 474. And 254, 472 talks about the clerk shall provide at any location where ballots are issued. And so I guess there's a question of where ballots are issued. Are they issued at the county clerk? When they receive in the mail, are they issued there? Are they issued at the mail house? So there's a little bit of ambiguity in that section. The other one is that voting booths for biennial and primary elections, that's 254 and 474, discusses that in each county with 35,000 or more electors, the county clerk shall maintain a number of voting booths equal to at least one voting booth per every 20,000 electors in the county. So are you anticipating requiring counties under this to have a voting booth or ballot box at every location where there are at least 20,000 electors?
My indication to legislative council would be that the ballot had to be dropped at the county clerk if it's dropped in person. You would not have those other locations, and I believe that this language omits those other locations.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I do have Representative Berger in the motion. Representative Berger.
I'm just kind of curious as to why you felt that the ballot should be have paid postage.
Okay, well, the U.S. Constitution, or excuse me, Chair Wilson and Representative Berger, I believe the U.S. Constitution, I do not know the actual section, but I believe it prohibits a poll tax, and so the discussion has been, and of course the idea there is you shouldn't have to pay to vote, and so the idea has been, would this preclude people from voting? And I believe that's why there was this collection of ballots in nursing homes on college campuses. This way, there's no question. The state takes care of any question about that being a poll tax in those statewide elections. And I think that it would go a long way to prohibit fraud. fraud. I don't like, an elderly person, for example, somebody comes to their door who they don't know, and they're put in a situation of trying to decide whether to hand their ballot over or not. I think that's very dangerous, and that's something we need to make sure doesn't happen.
Thank you, Representative Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just first of all, a comment is the requirements that Representative March speaks of were contained in House Bill 2001, which was passed in the last legislative session. And those were the requirements that you maintain some depositories, polling places, other than simply just the county elections office. And that was the practice during the last election. You know that in, I can't speak about all of Oregon, obviously, but in the metropolitan area, most cities had at least one, if not two, suburban cities drop-off locations for ballots, and obviously the city of Portland has quite a few more. I think it's also an interesting issue, and when you look at the elections returns, and I can only speak about Clackamas and Washington counties, more than 50% of the ballots came in the final closing days of the election between Friday and Tuesday in the general election. And I think, I can tell you from a general perspective of having discussed these issues with the minority leader, who's not here at this point, that we have some concerns about limiting the capability of people to cast ballots. We know that there are some concerns about practices, and I don't think there's an issue about developing standards for who can pick up ballots, but there is a concern about limiting the capacity of voters to actually cast a ballot. I should comment, too, and maybe Representative Close might respond, too, is that the issue about return postage for ballots is one that has been discussed in the past, and I don't think there's any philosophical objection to that other than the cost factor and where you'd find whatever it is, a million plus in this budget to be able to do that.
Thank you.
Just a comment.
Okay. Representative Walker, please.
The question I had is, I think you made a statement, something about the county elections, they would not be required to provide postage on the county elections, but they would for the statewide or state-mandated elections. Is that correct?
That's correct.
The other question I had was, in here, it's in section one, it says, deletes the drop boxes and establishes the ballot to be mailed or dropped at the office of the county clerk by signing in. I don't exactly understand deleting the drop box. I mean, if you're going to take it to the county clerk, you still have a drop box. So what drop boxes are you referring to?
Chair Wilson, Representative Walker. The drop box has become the post office box. There's a whole lot more of them than there are of those drop boxes when we had the last election. So I don't see a problem with the number of boxes and people able to deposit into them. I don't think that that would restrict the vote, to answer Representative Devlin's question. What we do is we designate a box at the county election only for that, but there would still be a box there. Yes, it would be, in my view, a more secure location than putting it at schools, putting it in libraries, and so forth.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? All right, Representative Close. Thank you. Pardon me, I missed one. Representative March.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if you're suggesting that we only use mailboxes and the county clerk's location, would you also be looking at changing the way we count ballots, in that currently they must be received by the county clerk on the election day, and would your change then allow us to consider postmark?
Chair Wilson, Representative March, I believe we do need to require that the ballot is received by election day, and that because of the way the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution reads, there has to be an election day. I think we might run into problems if we allow a postmark, but I'm not a constitutional attorney, but that would be my concern. But as far as counting the ballots, I believe the county clerks would like the flexibility to be able to count them ahead, and that's certainly something I support, but that's probably beyond the range of my bill.
Representative Walker.
Over on the third page in B, Representative Close, it says a person may not collect ballots or solicit by telephone or any other matter, et cetera, that in collecting the ballots. What about individuals who have family members that would want to collect their ballots? They qualify as a person, so if you have your grandchildren coming around to get your ballots, would this be a violation? It says a person, that there is no exemption here for doing that, or like I did, I have a neighborhood that I'm the youngest one in my neighborhood, everyone is much older, and they called and asked me to do this. If I go around and do that and ask my neighbors if they want me to take them to town, and I did take a lot of ballots to town, I would be in violation of this in providing a service for those who could not go.
Chair Wilson, Representative Walker, section B on page 3, what I was referring to. I believe it's section 1, 7, subsection C, says that the person's immediate family, the person's household members, can deposit them in the mail. So the immediate family could collect them. Others could not. They could be deposited in the mail, or at the
but they have to be deposited in the mail. They can't take them to clerk, because over on 7A it says the clerk may not accept a ballot at the office of the county clerk or any location from a person other than the elector who voted the ballot.
That is correct. But it
so even if it's the last day before the election or even election day, I couldn't collect them as a relative and take them into the county clerk's office. Is that what that means? I mean, that's what I read it to mean.
Chair Wilson, Representative Walker, I believe my intent was that the family member could take it and sign in for it, but I'll have to verify that with Legislative Council.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Garrard.
Mr. Chair, just kind of a point of information. It's my understanding that county clerks begin counting the votes on Election Day at 7 a.m. They start running them prior to the closing of the polls, and that is permitted. So that answers someone's question that they were addressing.
Chair Wilson, Representative Gerard, I believe the question came up with absentee ballots. They can't count those until after the election. And in times past, we had a huge number of those.
Right.
That's what I was referring to.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your testimony. Next up, Patty McGuire, Deputy Secretary of State. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Patty McGuire. I'm Deputy Secretary of State. I want to talk for a moment about some issues that concerns we have on certain sections of this legislation. I think we see this as an overreaction to a perception of problems rather than solving real problems. The fact is there is not a single, in the November 2000 election, there's not a single reported incident of any Oregon voter who gave their ballot to someone else where it didn't get counted. There was a front page story in the Wall Street Journal about rumors of problems, but to our knowledge, not a single ballot has disappeared. And it's a pretty easy thing to check. If anybody's concerned, they can call their county clerk, and you know, frankly, we'd like to know about it if it really did happen. But we don't think that this is a real problem. There are already very strong penalties in law for stealing ballots. It's a Class C felony to collect somebody's ballot and not turn it in. 5 years in prison, $100,000 fine. It's a pretty substantial disincentive to taking ballots. We are concerned that this bill outlaws good Samaritanship. As Representative Walker pointed out, my neighbor, who's a shut-in, called me a couple days before the election, or the weekend before the election, and asked me to come over because she can't see very well, and told me how to fill in the circles, and you know, I had her sign the envelope, and I took it and dropped it off at the Multnomah County library in my neighborhood for her. She asked me for advice on a couple ballot measures. I offered that when she asked. She didn't ask me on a couple of measures, and I ended up voting in a way, on her behalf in a way that sort of pained me in a couple of instances, but that's what I did. I didn't offer advice when she didn't ask. I think the eliminating the drop boxes, I think, creates a very serious timing issue if we keep the requirement that ballots be in the hands of clerks by 8 p.m. on Election Day. We issue the advice beginning on about Saturday before the election to people not to mail their ballots. If depositing the ballot in the mailbox is the only legal way to get it in, it becomes a real problem, particularly in an election like this last fall where half the ballots statewide came in those last few days, and in many counties, more than half the ballots were delivered in drop boxes. We have three very minor modest proposals to deal with issues that we know have arisen. We have legislation which would institute a 100-foot buffer around drop boxes so that only county elections officials within 100 feet of a drop box could collect ballots. I think the presumption is if you're outside Multnomah County Elections Office or any county elections office, if there's somebody counting ballots, I think collecting ballots, the presumption is that they are, in fact, county elections officials, and we would like to be sure that that is, in fact, the case. We also have legislation to require labeling of boxes used for collecting ballots that would say not an official drop box. I think there is the potential of confusion among voters as to what is an official drop box and what is not. And so if somebody is using some sort of collection device other than going door to door and hand it to me, which I think is pretty clear to the voters, that's not an official, it's not an elections official knocking on your door saying, give me your ballot, but that if they see a box and it says, deposit ballots here, we want people to understand that that's not an official drop box unless it is. And finally, I think everybody involved in elections learned a lesson in this last election regarding this issue, and I think we have a responsibility to do better education of voters about ballot collection. I know prior to the election, repeatedly we told people, we told the press, that voters should treat their ballots like it was their mortgage check, and you wouldn't hand your mortgage check or your rent check to somebody who came and banged on your door and said, I promised to get this to the bank. And we think people should look at their ballots in the same way. And I think we, as the next general election rolls around, we will commit to doing a better job of public education about the value of ballots and how people should treat them. So that's the end of my comments, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I do have a question. The vote by mail is relatively new, and I am amazed on one hand and gratified on another at your assertion that there were no reports of vote theft.
That really does surprise me, and if that is truly the case, I'm happy to see that didn't happen. But a couple of things related to that, and do you think the average citizen actually knows the penalty for vote stealing, ballot theft? And it's Class A felony,
C.
Class C, rather. And that is, that's important, that's big.
It's hard for me to judge, Mr. Chair, whether, how widespread that knowledge is. I think among people involved in the elections process, among people who do campaigns for a living, or even as an avocation, I think that knowledge spreads pretty well. That this is serious business, and the penalties for doing wrong are pretty severe. So I'm not sure that knowledge is widespread throughout the electorate, but I think among people who do campaigns, that's fairly well known.
As this vote by mail matures and people get more familiar with it, used to it as a way of voting, would you expect that we may begin to have more trouble with deliberate vote theft as time goes on?
Mr. Chair, I certainly hope not. I don't want to overreact to something that might happen in the future that hasn't happened yet. I think all people involved in elections need to be vigilant. One of the real benefits of vote by mail in terms of ensuring that the proper people are voting is that physical verification of every signature happens before a vote is counted. We think that's a very important component of the vote by mail process. That doesn't happen in a polling place election. You walk in and you sign, you say who you are and you sign the book. And if somebody walks in half an hour, if the real Carl Wilson walks in half an hour later, you've got a serious problem. That's a very important component to us in vote by mail, and something that we believe is vital to continuing it.
Thank you. Representative Devlin.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. McGuire, and by the way, I like your name.
Thank
McGuire.
You.
issues about, particularly like the first one, Patty McGuire. issues about elections and in terms of, well, I'll just use the word that's commonly used, election fraud, predate vote by mail. Yeah, I mean, that's not really a rhetorical question, but it's close to a rhetorical question. I mean, one of the things that after the only real major election that we had that was vote by mail other than special elections prior to the last session was the special election and nominating primary and special election to elect the replacement for Senator Packwood. But I think that's why the speaker came forward with House Bill 2001, and there was a work group trying to deal with a lot of those issues. And you think, too, that was based on some concerns about that special election to some extent. But it would probably be worthwhile for us either in this session or outside of this session to review the last general and primary election, because they were, in reality, our most major elections we've had vote by mail.
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, I think the Secretary of State's office, in conjunction with the County Clerks Association, is finishing now a review by elections officials of the conduct of the November 2000 election, and we will be presenting that to the legislature very early in February, and it was a chance for all of those people involved in conducting the election to look at what worked, what didn't work, what lessons we learned, and I think you will find that very enlightening. That admittedly is a review by elections officials and not a more broad general review, and I know there's legislation in for broader based task forces to study the elections process, and we're certainly happy to cooperate should the legislature direct something like that. But we wanted to, in a very short time frame, to give all of those of us involved in the elections process to a chance to sit down and compare notes across the state about what worked and what improvements are needed, and you will see that very shortly.
Mr. Chairman. Not every problem that has been identified is going to be resolved by a statewide voter file system, but I think the county clerks are pretty universal, and this Secretary of State and the last Secretary of State, and probably, they haven't spoken, but probably a number of the former Secretary of States prior to that are all in favor of a statewide voter file. Why do you think we have such difficulty, something voting, which is supposed to be a principal aspect of being a democratic institution, that we have such problems coming up with whether it's 5 million or 6 million to do what we all know is necessary?
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, I think that's more appropriately a question for your colleagues rather than for me. I think it is a very high priority for our office. We think that centralized voter registration will go a long way to addressing public concerns about fraud issues. Oregon has a long tradition of very little voter fraud. And I know leading up to the November election, as there was a lot of national interest in the fact that we were doing the country's first all vote by mail presidential election, I was asked repeatedly whether this was something that other states could adopt. And the answer that I gave at that point was that we had 20 years of experience with vote by mail, so it was not a new thing, and it would be difficult to impose it on a statewide basis in another state overnight. And B, we are a state with a very, virtually no history of rampant voter fraud, and that's certainly not true in other places. And I think that's an important component of why we are able to conduct free and fair elections in a situation where there are ballots floating around out there. I mean, it's not the controlled situation of a polling place, that people can have ballots on their kitchen tables, and we don't have rampant fraud.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a request. During prior consideration of 2001, the last session, the issue came up in terms of what the length of time ballots could be out, and we shortened it and felt that we couldn't really shorten it any closer. And I mean, I think the county clerks made it clear that it couldn't be any shorter. We learned that there are at least a few areas left in the state that actually don't have daily mail delivery. And I'm going on, I know, but I know that the post office unofficially makes a special effort to try to ensure that ballots that are deposited make it to the county clerks in time, county elections. But do the county clerks, and if they do, is there a tally from the general election, keep track of those ballots that actually arrive late? Because I'd be interested in knowing, just given the number of ballots that arrive in the last few days of the election, how many ballots actually arrived late for consideration?
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, I don't know the answer to that question, in that that is not a number that is reported to the Secretary of State's office. I know Ms. Irvin is signed up to testify, and she may be able to quantify that for Multnomah County, but we don't have that number.
I would be interested in, Mr. Chairman, in finding out that number, because it's an issue that we've discussed before, and I see two of the county clerks. There may be more of them in the back of the room, and I'm sure that the County Clerks Association has a way of finding that number.
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, if there is interest in having the Secretary of State's office poll the counties and get either a real number or an estimate of what that number is, we'd be happy to do so and provide that to you.
I have that interest. So.
Right. Thank you. Any further questions? I just want to mention to the committee that we hope to be by mid-month or just a little after that hearing a bill here regarding the statewide voter registry, something we're anxious to hear. Mr. McGuire, thank you very much. While we are talking about the aforementioned subject here, I'm going to pull things out of order just a bit and ask Vicki Irvin to come forward, Multnomah County Director of Elections, and maybe Representative Devlin can impose that question. Welcome, and if you'd identify yourself, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I am Vicki Irvin. I'm the Director of Elections in Multnomah County. testimony?
I don't have any written testimony. I have a few remarks, but I suspect that maybe the most productive thing that I can do for your time is to answer questions, because obviously a lot of them have arisen. I will make a couple of observations, if I might, about this bill. As you heard from Mr. McGuire, we have been doing elections in Oregon by mail since 1982. And the thing that was different about this last election cycle was that it was the first time we've done a primary election or a regularly scheduled primary election and a general election. And coincidentally, it is the first time that these issues about people collecting ballots, setting up ad hoc drop sites, that sort of thing, is the first time that those have arisen as well. I have a couple of theories. Those of you who know me know I'm never shy of theories. I have a couple of theories as to why that occurred. The first that we saw in Multnomah County actually was in the primary election. And we did not see the ad hoc drop boxes so much as we saw people going door to door. And I believe that this was directly a result of ballot measure 47. Ballot measure 47 now has a provision that says that in order to pass a measure that affects taxes, basically, you must have at least a 50% participation in the election. Now, in the general election, that was a given, especially a presidential. You're going to have that. In a primary election, it's more nip and tuck whether you're going to make that. And so there were many districts on the ballot who had measures that needed that 50% turnout. And this was one way for their campaigns to do what they could do to ensure or to try and ensure that they got a 50% participation in order to qualify should their measure pass. That was the motive that we saw in the primary. I don't think, well, obviously we didn't see that one in the general because the 50% requirement doesn't apply to a general election. I think what we saw in the general was we had an abundance of enthusiasm for campaigns. What we experienced in our own county was people who viewed this perhaps as a pep rally or a way to get out and support their candidate, not recognizing that the difference is that when you have an official drop site, this is established by and regulated by the county clerk's office, and the people who are there and the process of getting those ballots back to you provides accountability. You're the person who's there, the process, the transport, all of that, you have accountability so that those ballots are safeguarded and there is no opportunity either for mischief, fraud, what have you, in any of those processes. When you have a person on their own who says, well, I'm going to set up a drop box here, there is no accountability. There simply is none. They probably have the best of intentions. I don't happen to think the worst of Oregonians. We certainly don't have any history of fraud, although there is obviously potential now that we hadn't thought about before. But I am worried about accountability. We've seen it over the years with voter registration, where people whose main task is not voter registration, but who do voter registration, set them aside, they get put in a drawer, they get buried in the bottom of the stack, and 3 months later, oh yeah, and they send them in. It is the lack of accountability that alarms me as much as the potential for the fraud. And that is one reason why you may see another piece of legislation, in fact, has already been introduced, where, and Mr. McGuire referred to it, we took a slightly different tact from this piece of legislation and said, we're not trying to create barriers to make it harder for people to participate. That's not what I think anybody wants. But we need to set up information so that people know when they turn in their ballot somewhere, whether or not they're turning it into somebody who has accountability. And by virtue of being able to say in front of a drop site, this is not an official drop site, then people know, aha, maybe there is no accountability. They may still decide to leave their ballot there, but that's their choice. And we're not trying to police how people or, you know, force people to do things a certain way. We just want to make sure that they have adequate information about it so that they're not inadvertently misled into thinking that they've done the proper thing and, in fact, perhaps lost the ballot in doing that. I think you heard a reference to the Wall Street Journal, and I was the one who was featured in that article. And we'll be glad to share with you what happened outside of our office during the general election if you want me to take time. But I think most of you have heard the stories about people coming to outside of our office and collecting ballots and then going away with them. We don't know where they went, but we think they probably just went to their own ad hoc drop center, put it in their box, and eventually it made it to us. That's the best we can figure. We also, in our office, received complaints from voters about, in one case, I know we got multiple complaints, was some woman who had set up a cardboard box at the corner of 20th and Division in Southeast Portland. And voters were mightily upset about it because that one, I think, was fairly apparent that that was not an official drop site. And to the voters who called who were upset, it wasn't right. They felt like this, in fact, somehow was a vulnerability and should not be allowed to happen. Now, obviously, our office didn't go out and investigate because there is nothing illegal about it. We couldn't have done anything except say, yes, she's there. Well, we knew she was there because we got multiple calls on it. But those are the sorts of things that create a perception, number one, of a problem with the ballots, and number two, an opportunity. And that, I think, is what we're all trying to struggle with and figure out how do we address this while striking a balance between the needs of the voters, the needs of the campaigns, and the needs of the administrator. Because we don't want to overweigh it in any one of those areas. That would be counterproductive. This bill, evidently, especially with some of the amendments, which I have not seen, also does some other things. It addresses some issues with voter registration as far as updates and duplicates. I don't know exactly what it's going to be doing, but we need to be very careful because of two things. The first is that we are somewhat restricted on how many things that we can change in light of the federal requirements of NAVRA, NAVRA being the National Voter Registration Act of 1993, that basically requires us to continue updating certain voters right through Election Day. So we need to watch for that. And the other is we need to be careful about reacting to rumors that have no foundation, specifically the problem of duplicates. It's something that we're all concerned about and we're watching for, but we don't have any hard evidence that it is a problem. And so we need to kind of, again, keep that in balance. So that's one more issue. And the third one here is postage. I think it would be wonderful if the state decided that they had enough money that they would pick up the postage for returning ballots. I don't happen to think that postage stamp is a deterrent to voters participating, and there is a longstanding AG's opinion that it does not constitute a poll tax. What I am concerned about here is that what I've seen in the testimony from Representative Close is that she would have you pay for state elections but not local elections. And I would make two observations. The first is that if there is any merit to the argument that it's poll tax, then it's poll tax for every election, not just state elections. But beyond that, I think it's a disservice to the voters to say that they have to try and keep track of which elections they have to pay for and which ones they don't. And so I think you need consistency. I'm available to answer any questions.
Thank you. Representative Devlin has a question for you.
Ms. Irvin. And we actually go back a while. The question that I had about ballots coming in after the official cutoff time, did you keep a tally of those in Multnomah County?
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, we didn't keep a tally. I could give you sort of a maximum estimate that during all the time after the election that ballots came in late.
Right.
We maybe had as many as 2,000, but I think that might be a little high.
Okay.
We still have them, so we could get a more exact count.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'm interested in that. Actually, it's more of an academic issue, is that, we tell voters that they have to effectively, if they want their vote to be counted, they have to deposit it in the mail by Saturday. And having a little bit of evidence to tell them that some people, you know, who sent it in the mail late didn't have their votes counted might be a little bit beneficial to those of us that are trying to promote participation in the process. One of the things to be fair in this, and I know that there are always going to be issues out there about elections, but to be fair about the issue of no reports of people saying that their ballot is not counted, wouldn't it be fair to say that the average voter doesn't actually know if their vote is counted? I mean, I might check after an election to see that my vote was actually tallied. No one can tell how you voted, but they can tell if you voted. But the average voter isn't going to do that. So if they handed their ballot to somebody, they're not going to know whether they were actually counted or not. Is that a fair statement?
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, I think that that is a fair statement, that this is one of the first elections I can remember getting any questions about it. And primarily, it came about after the story broke in the Wall Street Journal, that there perhaps were people who had given their ballots at places and they wanted to make sure that they came in. We got calls, I know, but I don't think we got a large number of them even at that. I think most people trusted that what they did to turn their ballot in, whether it was by mail or whether it was a drop site, was successful. And their ballot made it to us and it was counted.
Mr. Chairman, a follow-up. Although these issues may not have been as prevalent, prior to vote by mail, we were getting numbers, well, on average, as high as 50% absentee, and in some counties, even higher than that. So some of these issues were still there, probably not as visible, wouldn't that be correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, yes, I think that we were seeing more and more of that because of the increased use of the absentee ballot.
Thank you.
Thank you for the questions. All right, thank you very much. Next up will be Kathy Eaton, League of Women Voters, Oregon. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kathy Eaton. I'm the government chair for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. Mr. Devlin and I have had some conversations in the past over the issues, and I suspect from the agenda for this legislative session, we will be getting better acquainted. However, I am here to express some concern about ballot measure 2087. Some of the issues have already been raised, and I'm not going to go over those. But the League is really concerned that vote by mail be very efficiently and effectively ensured. And we believe that elections should be conducted in a manner which encourage voter participation. And for that reason, we are opposing the bill as it's written, because we feel that it does offer lack of participation to people who are in community senior centers, for instance, who are rural voters, who are disabled voters, and the wording of the current legislation prevents some of the collections that you've heard about, where a neighbor can assist who isn't a family member. There are a number of issues for people who live out in the country, and I think that Representative Walker brought that to the attention, where it isn't feasible for a whole string of people on a road to go in and mail their ballot, take care of their ballots. So we feel that in order that every person have their right to vote represented, that's an issue that is brought up in this ballot, in this measure. We have seen the amendments that have been proposed by the clerks and support those, because they do put back into the measure some of the concerns that we have. The other issue that we raise, of course, is the fiscal issue. The League doesn't have a position pro or con in terms of the cost of whether you have postage or not, other than the cost to the state. I haven't seen a figure on that. I don't know whether the committee has one or not. We certainly agree with what Ms. Irwin has said with regard to postage. If it's for one election, it should be for all elections. And the counties certainly have enough fiscal problems as well as the state. This could be an imposition. We don't believe that not having postage paid is a deterrent to people participating. We're seeing an increasing number of people participating. So we urge that you do look at the amendments that are proposed for this measure and come up with a good solution.
Thank you. I would ask you briefly, you say here in your testimony that you are interested in vote by mail operating efficiently and effectively. Do you have any concerns at this point in time about how ballots are collected, the ad hoc drop zones? Are you fine with everything the way it is, or do you have something that you...
I think the issues that have been raised in terms of making sure that when you deposit your ballot, if it's deposited or when you give it to someone to deliver, it's actually delivered. But I believe that in terms of the way in which that vote can be checked, there is the accountability that you have as an individual to find out whether that vote has taken place. I think that I would agree with Mr. McGuire's remarks that we need to make sure that there are safeguards with regard to those boxes and that they be labeled. I think that would probably address the problem effectively. The League is very much in favor of having a centralized voter registration list. We think that there are two things that happen. There is a central place where everyone is listed, and as we understand the proposal that will be coming to you, it also enables the counties to have a standardized way of dealing with the lists and perhaps with each other. They all can't talk to each other as we understand it technically right now. I have supervised elections in Bosnia for a couple of elections where they have a centralized voter list. And most of the Balkans and other countries in Europe have this. And when we talk about our elections, and they were very much interested in our elections, I was over there while the election was going on here, and some of the things that happened in our elections, they were very curious about, couldn't understand why it operated that way. So we certainly are in favor of the ballots themselves having some standardization, those kinds of things.
Thank you. For the questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up will be Andy High and John Wyckoff, OSA, Western Oregon University.
Hi, Chair Wilson, members of the committee. For the record, I'm John Wyckoff, Legislative Director for the Oregon Student Association, and to my left is Andy High, the Vice Chair of our board.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you. For the record, I'm Andy High, Student Body President at Western Oregon University and Vice Chair of the Oregon Student Association. I want to start off giving a little bit of background about myself. I'm originally from Klamath Falls, and I'm a registered voter in Klamath Falls. I'd like to talk to you about House Bill 2087 and OSA's opposition to it. But I want to state that we do support the statewide file and the labeling of the unofficial ballot boxes proposed by the Secretary of State and Representative Close. Before the voter registration drive at WOU, we had about approximately 1,000 students of the 4,700 registered to vote on our campus. After our efforts, we were able to approximately have over half of our student population registered to vote, which left us registering over 1,300 students at our campus. On our campus, we were unable to attain an official drop-off box like other universities. The county clerk told us that we couldn't have one, but we could collect the ballots. Though we are very clear with the voters that we were unofficial, we are doing this as citizens of Oregon, and we want to collect and drop off your ballots for you due to circumstances that they may have had or something like that to get in. Our ballot collecting wasn't only directed towards student efforts. It also went to the community and surrounding areas. I, in fact, attended Grange meetings, city council meetings, and other outside community functions to outreach to the community, to also that we will be doing the service for you all, for everyone. In our efforts on the last day, on November 7th, we collected over 500 ballots by 4 p.m. that we had then taken to the Polk County Clerk over in Dallas. This wasn't only students, it was community members that had dropped it by. A lot of faculty said, you know, I didn't get a chance, you guys mind dropping this by? Many students came to us thanking us for this, because at the time of November 7th, midterms hit, paper deadlines, and they were afraid that they wouldn't be able to get them in. You know, a lot of freshmen didn't have cars that were unable to drive them to wherever the official site was at. So this was also a service that we were thanked for many times. While House Bill 2087 allows family members or spouses to drop off ballots, this is where it concerns for someone like myself who attends school in Monmouth and is a registered voter in Klamath County. You know, if I had my ballot up there, I was a couple days late and I couldn't get it in the mail in time, it would be a 4.5-hour trip for myself to drive down and drop it off in the Polk County Klamath County Clerk's office. Many students and other citizens were maybe in lack of effort by my partisan, weren't aware of that we couldn't have them postmarked. I think there was some confusion. And our efforts were very nonpartisan. We were aimed at getting students out to vote. Which candidate or party they supported was we weren't worried about. For example, we invited many candidates to our campuses to let the students decide who would best serve them and what their views at the legislature would be. This election encouraged many students to vote. Still currently, students are talking about this on our election that, wow, I'm glad we had such a great turnout that I can say I participated in this event. And we feel that discouraging in this bill it could discourage many people that already have went out and received, that got out and voted and that sort of thing. And I feel as an elected representative of student government, being student body president, is my job to remind students to vote and get out the vote. We all worked really hard for this campaign. I'm proud to say that I was part of this campaign, not only on WOU's campus, but statewide. Thanks.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, just a quick clarification. Proposal to have marked unofficial boxes is supported by Secretary Bradbury, which the OSA board is supportive of, though I don't believe necessarily Representative Close supports that one way or the other. I'm not sure, but I don't believe that is part of this proposal.
Would you say it is general knowledge among the student body that there is any kind of penalty at all for vote stealing or ballot stealing?
Yeah, as being, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I would say that as myself, the person that delivered those 500 ballots on that last day, I was very aware of the time limit, 8 o'clock. In fact, that's why I said 4 o'clock in case there is a little half-hour overrun. We closed the doors completely and drove to the county. I think the people that were delivering on our campus and who were working with me were well aware that it was a felony to not turn them in.
Yeah, thank you. I know I'm asking you to speculate here, but it is of concern to me because I just have a nagging feeling that mm-hmm. a number of people do not really understand the gravity of that. And I just want to explore that a bit.
If I may, Chair Wilson, I think that the student governments who engage in this service are very aware of the heavy responsibility that it is to do this for their fellow students and are aware that there are heavy penalties attached for not doing it the right way. Whether the student body at large is aware, I'm not sure, but I know that with the student governments who have been engaging in this service for the rest of the students that they represent, that they take it very seriously and are very aware of the seriousness of that endeavor.
Sure. Thank you. Representative Doyle.
I'm just curious, I guess, as the association made the decision to provide this service, and you had a number of members that would go out and canvass, you know, to pick up the ballots, that the way you worked it, or did the students have to come to a specific drop site?
Mr. Chair, Representative Doyle, they had to come directly to the student government office where we never left it unattended. There were three people that actually could collect the ballots due to that they knew the extent of the felony and that sort of thing and the regulations. So at Western, that's how we ran our operation. We announced through campus, put signs up that said, drop your ballots off at the student government offices with an official box.
And was there any of the other colleges where the members would actually go out to collect ballots?
Chair Wilson, Representative Doyle, there were different efforts on different campuses that included different things. For example, at the University of Oregon, they constructed what they believe to be the world's largest ballot box ever as a means to collect ballots. Though there were, I believe in the student government efforts that went on, there were examples, for instance, of going into dormitories and collecting ballots through dormitories and then taking them into the county clerk's office or to the very large ballot box in the center of campus. When that was happening, my understanding is they were identified as student, as people working with the student government. And I could get you more information on the different, of the campuses we represent, the different activities that went on, if you'd like.
I'd be interested in that. And one follow-up. How about then any kind of guidelines or instructions that went to those individuals that were out collecting ballots as far as conversations they'd have with the people that they were collecting ballots from, anything like that?
Chair Wilson, Representative Doyle, we made it, and I think with the campuses that we work with, it was very clear that you were to identify yourself and to be upfront about what you were doing, and that you were to simply collect the ballots and then take them from there to the appropriate place. And so there was training done with the volunteers who were working on that, and with the folks in student government who were doing that. I suspect there were a bit of different degrees of that with the depending on the campus, but because it's taking place on a campus, and because there are, it's the student government that's doing it, there's going to be training that goes on, and there's going to be a concerted effort to make sure that it's done, in the right way.
Representative Garrard.
John, Andy, at a time when many of us are concerned about the voter, the young demographic voter turning out, I'd like to personally thank you and commend you for your initiative and your community service, and I certainly hope you'll continue those efforts.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.
And the last individual I have signed up to testify is Jacqueline Zimmer.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jacqueline Zimmer, and I'm the director of the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging and Disabilities, also known as O4AD. And we just wanted to add a few comments to the hearing this afternoon, just some minor concerns about this. This is something we're just going to watch. I'm not going to state that we're adamantly opposed to fixing problems with the election laws or so forth, but just to let you know that what we really want to make sure is that some of our seniors don't end up, and I say this sort of facetiously, but going to jail for helping somebody with their voting. I mean, the senior population does rely on a lot of volunteerism within that population, and we want to make sure that people that are helping aren't in trouble for helping, and that people who give ballots aren't afraid to give ballots to their neighbors, and just to make sure that seniors are able to vote with ease. Senior drop boxes are very popular, and we'd like to keep them available for people to use if that's something that they want. I heard some talk earlier about the fiscal impact of this. I think that right now, if the legislature can find about $1.5 million for this, I have a couple of programs I'd like to see them dedicate that to. I have a program that had a 9-to-1 federal match that was reduced and eliminated in the governor's budget. So let me know if you find the funding for this. And also, I know there's in some of the older neighborhoods, they've actually, the post office has completely eliminated mailboxes because the mailboxes are broken into. And so if I have to say that probably the idea of a stamp is a nice idea, but if there are no stamps, if that part doesn't make it through, then, it can be tricky enough for our people to mail things and to come up with the stamp and so forth. So anyway, just to kind of keep those things in mind, just making sure that seniors don't end up getting accidentally punished for voting.
Thank you. Any questions? All right, Ms. Zimmer, thank you very much. I want to thank Representative Close for bringing this forward. I think all of us are interested in prospective measures that will increase the efficiency of the system, and that's something I think everybody here can agree on. And again, we look forward to talking about the voter file, which is going to come before the committee probably the middle of the month. It's something that I think we're all interested in, and if we can get the right people in the building interested in bringing forth the money or finding it, I'm sure that would be smooth sailing for us once again. All right, anything to add before we adjourn? Thank you. Meeting is adjourned.